Good morning. It is time to get up with Tua. The final piece of the puzzle put in place yesterday. What does it mean for where he gets drafted? We have all the answers right off the top. Then, anonymous quotes about a star receiver with a star on his helmet. Are they right? Did Dallas make a big mistake? And then, did you see where Tom Brady is living in Tampa? Let's just say this is legendary logic. You know what? Let's have some fun this morning on a Friday as we get up with you from Bristol. Again, Mike Greenberg here, and that is the spirit in which we do this today. We're going to try and have some fun because we assume if you turned your television on ESPN this morning, it is because you want an escape from all the other things that are going on out there. And we begin by sending our heartfelt thanks to all of the medical professionals and the first responders who are keeping us safe as we all live through this together. We are delighted if we're able to provide any sort of respite for it for you starting right now. And we get up and go with news from the NFL. Titans star running back Derrick Henry signed his $10.2 million franchise tender yesterday. The two sides are still hopeful a long-term deal can be reached before the deadline, which is July 15th. We get up and go to interesting news. Potential number one overall pick LaMelo Ball's manager told ESPN yesterday that they have purchased Ball's Australian basketball team. The team later released a statement saying no sale has been finalized. We'll keep an eye on it. And we get to this. Khabib Nurmagomedov has reversed course, telling ESPN he still wants to fight Tony Ferguson at UFC 249 if they can find a location that is still tentatively scheduled for April 18th. Other news, stateside, the Ivy League deciding not to give spring sport athletes an extra year of eligibility despite the NCAA's ruling earlier this week. It's in line with conference policy. They have not allowed fifth years for medical redshirts. To the NFL, with the 2020 season starting on time, is contingent on widespread coronavirus testing and the removal of gathering restrictions, among other conditions. That's according to the NFL's chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, whose comments come just days after the league had said that the expectation was to start the season as scheduled. Here are some of the quotes from the league's doctor. As long as we're still in a place where a single individual tests positive for the virus, that you have to quarantine every single person who was in contact with them in any shape, form, or fashion, then I don't think you can begin to think about reopening a team sport because we're going to have positive cases for a very long time. Our NFL insider is Dan Graziano, and he is with us now. Dan, what are you hearing from inside the National Football League about their expectations for all this?
Yeah, I think the problem is there's really no way to have an expectation. And when you look at these quotes from Alan Sills, what they underline is the uncertainty of the situation and where we are right now. We're about 5 months away from what would be the start of the NFL season. If anyone's going to tell you that they know for certain what this situation is going to look like 5 months from now, they are telling you a lie. And when I talk to people around the league, they're saying, yes, we've talked about off-season programs. We've talked about how those will work. At this point, we haven't talked about serious contingencies for the start of the season because the hope and the belief is that we might be in a place where they're able to open the season as they would initially have planned. But the problem is they don't know. And really, they're evaluating this every couple of weeks, saying, what does the situation look like 2 weeks from now? Let's reevaluate again at that point. And that's the way that they have to handle it, because so much of what's going to happen depends on what happens in the next couple of weeks, what happens in the next month, how people conduct themselves, how the social distancing restrictions are enforced and followed. And without knowing all that, there's no way to know how things are going to look in 5 months. Right now, the numbers on this thing in terms of cases are in the hundreds of thousands. And the focus is on not overwhelming the healthcare system nationwide. Once that's under control, people are still going to be able to get sick. And they're not going to want to put whole NFL teams together and all the people that are associated with that if there's a risk of them all getting sick. So we're hoping at some point we'll be at a stage where that's the conversation. We're hoping at some point we'll be past a stage where that's the conversation. But I think what Sills is trying to say is we have to get past another couple of stages here before we can talk about playing football games.
But all of that obviously makes sense. The one piece we do know that will go forward as scheduled is the NFL draft, and we're now within 3 weeks of that. And so that brings us to our top story this morning, and that is Tua Tagovailoa, who received overwhelmingly positive results after undergoing a voluntary medical recheck yesterday. That news was told to our Laura Rutledge. The recheck was performed by an independent doctor who was selected by the NFL, and the results were shared with all 32 teams. And so I believe I do. There is Laura. Okay, Laura Rutledge is with us live this morning. So this was the scan we've been talking about for a while that was supposed to take place next week. What is the significance of the fact that it has happened, and what did we learn from it?
Well, basically, Greeny, to his camp, decided that there was no reason to wait on this scan because the hip has performed so well and responded so well to the physical activity that he's been doing recently. And I think another key point in all of this is the fact that when you talk about the independent doctor that was brought into this, the doctor that they wanted to make sure, you know, would be unbiased in all of this from the combine rechecks. His name is Thomas Bird, and he's in Nashville, but he's the Tennessee Titans doctor and is thought of as one of the best hip specialists in all of the world. And so he's somebody that has a ton of credibility in NFL circles when it relates specifically to hip injuries. So that really does provide a lot of these teams that have been interested in this and wanted to know what was going to happen here a lot of reassurance about who is conducting this recheck. Everything looks great. They're going to continue to follow their plan with the conservative nature of the physical activity, and they feel really good about where they're at right now.
All right, Laura, that's great. And so let's we sort of look at this thing as a jigsaw puzzle, if we will. The last piece has been put into place as far as what the teams are going to know when they make a decision one way or the other 3 weeks from yesterday. And that brings us to Mel Kiper Jr., of course, who is synonymous with the NFL draft. So, Mel, it seems we now know everything we're going to know about Tua's physical situation. What do you think all of this means as far as where he will be drafted 3 weeks from yesterday?
That's the question, Green. Do they know enough? Do they have that first-hand ability that they thought they needed, but they weren't able to have? So I think it's going to be an individual team to take the Redskins picking at two. How do they feel about it? Does Miami at five feel about all this? It's still a leap of faith with your medical staff projecting where Tua will be. And that's fine. If he comes back healthy from the hip, it looks like he's on track to do that, that's great. But can he remain durable once he's healthy from the hip, once he's in the NFL taking hits, which was an issue at Alabama against collegiate football players? So that's an unknown that you will not find out until he's out there playing quarterback in the NFL. So that's that, just that guessing game. You're just going to have to be hopeful that the injuries are behind him. That's a thing of the past. And like I said, he can remain a guy that's out there from start to finish, year in and year out in the National Football League.
Now, in your recent mock draft, you have him at five, but you don't project trades. Do you think it is likely that he is going to go earlier than that, that someone is going to move up? Maybe it is the Dolphins or someone to go ahead of them and take him before we get to the fifth pick.
Remember, when I originally projected that, Greeny, we thought everything was going to be normal. Well, it's been anything but. And at that point, I thought that might be a possibility for a trade-up if you have all the information you need, all the information you had from a team standpoint, an individual team standpoint, doing all their due diligence, meeting with Tua, all that. Well, that is not happening. So that's why I think at five, it's going to take a team like Miami decide, do we want to stay at five and look at Justin Herbert? And remember, we don't know if Miami has Herbert ahead of Tua right now anyway, Greeny. If they do, they sit at five, they take Justin Herbert, and they roll the dice, they'll still be there at five, and nobody else will trade up to get Justin Herbert, quarterback out of Oregon. So I think because of the uncertainty in terms of Tua's future, I didn't think Washington at two would take him, and I'm not sure from which people you talked in the league whether Miami would want to give up multiple draft picks go up and get Tua when some in the league are just guessing that maybe Miami likes Justin Herbert maybe a little bit better.
That's fascinating. Mike Tannenbaum said the same thing. You think there is a real chance that Herbert winds up going ahead of Tua?
You know, nobody knows what Miami's thinking. This is guessing from outside people. Nobody knows what Miami internally is thinking, Greeny, but there has been speculation, even going back to Senior Bowl week, that Herbert was the guy they were looking at. Now, whether that's true or false, we don't know. That's what's great about the draft. There's unknowns up until April 23rd through April 25th. But I think when you look at Justin Herbert, he's clean coming in. He did everything right from the end of the year to Senior Bowl week MVP, Senior Bowl game MVP, nailed the combine and the pro day. So I think for Justin Herbert, there's no concerns about that in terms of injury, where Tua, even with the great situation it looks like so far coming back from the hip, everything being positive, as Laura has talked about, for about a month now. Even with that, I think that durability concern is why Tua now is a guy. Maybe you just take it five if you like him to trade up and give up multiple draft picks, I think is very iffy right now.
All right, Mel, so well done. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you in an hour. Mel will rejoin us. Meanwhile, I've got a really nice group put together today, and you know what's going to put a smile on your face? Look at Rex Ryan, who's back with us for the first time in far too long, and Orlovsky is with us this morning as well. Rex, I want to start with you. Take us through. You've been in there. You've been in these rooms where these decisions are getting made, and when it gets gets to the nitty-gritty. You're dealing with a player with the kinds of injury concerns that we have here with Tua. You know it as well as anybody. Take me through the conversations, and would you, if you were a team that needed a quarterback, would you be willing to take Tua with the concerns that exist on him right now?
Well, Greeny, I look at it this way. I think this is the biggest gamble in the history of the NFL draft. And the reason I say that is you can't get your doctors, don't get their hands on them, all that kind of stuff. One thing we know, this young man is absolutely an amazing quarterback. He's got everything, all the intangibles, that leadership, when it's the brightest, he plays great. So to me, I just think the guy's an amazing prospect. However, those injuries, if you're going to just ignore the injuries, I don't care how he's working out right now. One thing I know about him, he's been hurt in college. Everybody knows about the three operations he's had. Really? Well, I've heard he's had five operations. So if that doesn't concern you, now look, I know a lot of people in the NFL, and I'm getting that information, you know, from them. So if he's had five surgeries, that's a major concern. And do you pass on him? Boy, I tell you what, if I only have one first-round pick, I think it's too risky. I think if I have multiple picks like the Dolphins do, they can probably take that gamble, and I think they will.
All right, so you're talking – this seems to be the way this thing has moved in the last couple of days. The Dolphins should take him at five because they have multiple picks, but should not give up any of that capital to move up and get him. Dan Orlovsky, what would you do?
Yeah, I disagree. I'd have to go get Tua Greening. I've been steadfast on that. I want to talk about the hits that Tua has suffered, because the reality is this. The NFL protects quarterbacks way more than college football does. College football's protection of players is often tied to the targeting rule, which is a lot of times like hits to the head or the neck area. They don't protect quarterbacks like we see in the NFL. We see in the NFL like defenders will brush by a quarterback and here comes a flag, personal foul. And so a lot of the hits that Tua suffered in college, they're probably not going to happen in the NFL because players defensively are much more aware of those hits and the ramifications of them. We don't have the same type of rules when it comes to, or the enacting of rules when it comes to college football in the NFL. The second thing, like Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson also had some injury concerns coming out of college. Do you think either of their teams regret drafting those guys? Every team would draft those guys if they had the chance. So yes, you have to take a risk, because here's the reality. The safe pick can fail too. We all continue to say like, well, Justin Herbert might be a safer pick. Well, he's just as likely to fail as Tua is because of injury. And for us to think that the doctors aren't going to be able to see Tua, I don't buy that. Like, would you buy a $35 million home and never see it? These doctors in Miami and in the Chargers, they will find a way to go see Tua if they have to make sure they make the right decision.
All right, I can already tell we are going to have spirited discussion between Orlovsky and Rex Ryan today, and I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be fun. And then we have terrific guests coming your way a little later this morning as well. I want you to know that Ric Flair is going to be with us at 9:15 Eastern time this morning. Doris Burke is going to join us at 9:30 this morning. We're all aware that she has recovered now after having been tested positive for the coronavirus. She's doing great. She's going to join us. And then Ice Cube, with the Big Three getting ready to come back and bring live sports back, he will join us, all three of them live in our second hour this morning on Get Up. That's only part of what we have coming your way. Also on the way, Amari Cooper has talent, but does that talent match the paycheck? There are some who say he's overpaid. What does our crew say? You'll find out. And then they won multiple championships. They've been unquestioned leaders of their teams. They are legends. Now they share another bond. You'll hear what that is. Coming up, Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
There may be no games,
no practices,
no high fives,
but we're all still part of a team,
and we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance,
but still checking on each other,
helping the most vulnerable,
and supporting our heroes
that are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused,
but the best parts
are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team
right now.
Back on Get Up this morning. At the start of free agency, the Cowboys signed Amari Cooper to a five-year deal, made him the second highest paid receiver in the NFL by average annual value. In a recent article in The Athletic, multiple NFL executives suggested that Dallas overpaid. One executive said, it comes back down to how many guys are really difference makers. That is who you pay the top of the market to. I'm sorry. Amari Cooper helps, but he does not tilt the field. He has not shown up consistently. Dan Graziano, NFL Insider, what do you think of that?
Greeny, I'm not a particular fan of anonymous opinions. I don't think they have a whole lot of value. What I do like are numbers. And if you look at the numbers on Amari Cooper's contract, it's not a five-year, $100 million deal. He gets $40 million fully guaranteed over the next 2 years, and then that's it. They take it from there. They might make decisions to keep him. They might not. $40 million over 2 years. If they had franchised him this year and next year, they would have had to pay him $39.5 million. So those numbers look pretty close to me. Seems to me like they gave him market value. Seems to me like, if anything, he might have done better if he'd taken himself out on the open market, potentially. And in terms of difference maker, he has been a difference maker for the Cowboys. Since they traded for him midway through the 2018 season, the Cowboys are the number one offense, the third most efficient offense. Dak Prescott has thrown for the most yards of any quarterback since that time. So I don't understand those who would criticize the Amari Cooper contract. Yes, it seems like a lot of money, but this is where the market is for wide receivers. He was going to be a free agent. They got him for basically the same price they would have had to pay him if they had franchised him 2 years in a row.
Yeah, as is the case with quarterbacks, sometimes timing is as important as production, and when these deals get done for these players. Dan, thank you. Let me go to another Dan. I've got Orlovsky and Rex Ryan with me. Dan Orlovsky, what do you think about the notion that right now Amari Cooper is overpaid in Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, to Graziano's point, for an executive to say that, it's just incorrect. I mean, we have so much data and numbers to prove that he's been tremendously impactful for Dak Prescott in that offense. That being said, the Cowboys had no choice. He held the Cowboys hostage, because if the Cowboys had let Amari Cooper walk, their season would have been basically done in March, because they would have had no real viable weapon outside of Michael Gallup. I've been outspoken and on the record. I would not have paid Amari Cooper. I played with guys like Andre Johnson and Reggie Wayne and Calvin Johnson. Those guys would have never allowed for a fourth down on the last game of the season, the most important player of our season. They would have never allowed for them to be on the sidelines and not on the field. And I'm talking about that fourth down against the Eagles. So for that reason, I wouldn't have paid Amari Cooper. That he did not fight to get on the field for that play would have been too big a deal for me. And I don't know if that's an indication that Amari Cooper truly doesn't love football. I would agree with the executive that certain people get paid the top of the market, and they have to check every single box. And he does for a lot of the physical, but does he love football and is obsessed with football? I struggle to believe that after that fourth down, and for that reason, I wouldn't have paid Amari.
Yeah, that did rub a lot of people the wrong way. What do you think, Rex Ryan?
Well, I agree with Dan on the fact that I wouldn't have paid this guy. To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell.
All right.
No way in hell would I have paid this guy. To me, you pay Dak Prescott. Forget all those numbers. That, you know, they're number one in the league because of Dak Prescott, not because of this guy. It's a deep draft at receiver. They made a huge mistake right here.
Here's what I like about that. Whether I agree with it or I don't, and frankly, I don't, but at least Rex Ryan is saying it. He's putting his face to it, and he's putting his name to it. In my opinion, there is no more sniveling coward in sports than the unnamed executive taking shots at decisions other teams make and at players other teams sign. You're not exposing dangerous or reckless behavior, which is what the whole point of unsourced material is supposed to be. I'm not criticizing the person who's reporting it. That's what you do. But you know what? If you're going to say something like that, Rex Ryan, put your name to it. There's this is a person who I guarantee you, this unnamed executive, walks around telling everyone how tough he is because he's in the world of football. But you know what? He's actually a chicken.
Right, and I agree with you. There's nothing worse than that. And to me, those are people you don't want in your organization. This guy being a and you know what? I guarantee you it's a legitimate thing. Somebody said it. Because it's true. It's accurate. It's an accurate statement. But for you not to put your name on, it's a joke. Look, I know I'm a former head coach, all that kind of stuff. I have the guts to put it out there. That's no surprising. That's who I am. But I'm dealing with the fact I coached for 30 years, 20 years in the NFL. That's what I'm judging this on. Your great receivers show up in huge moments. You mentioned, Dan mentions how he's not on the field. On a fourth down play, are you kidding me? Well, that's because he breaks his routes off. He doesn't run, you know, he's going to run when he wants to. He certainly has the ability to be a top-notch receiver, but he doesn't show the consistency. He doesn't show up against good players. It's a good thing he never played against a Darrell Revis when I had him. That guy, he would have taken his lunch money.
All right, we have up against the clock. Dan, we'll get more from you as we continue on this, because there's one thing I want to put a smile on everybody's face with. Tom Brady, we all know that he's going down to Tampa, and he has found himself a new home. He has rented Derek Jeter's 30,000-foot waterfront mansion on Davis Island. It is a residence that features 7 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, an entertainment and billiards room, an elevator, a swimming pool, a fountain, a boat dock, and an 8-foot security gate. That is where Tom Brady is going to be living while he's down there in Tampa. Sounds good to me. As we continue, the questions about Tua always start with his health. I'll tell you something else you should be thinking about when you're going to draft him in a moment. But first, a little sneaky Hembo time. Rex, we're going to have a little fun. Here we go from Hembo for Rex Ryan. Who was the last Alabama quarterback to win an NFL playoff game? Ooh, that's a good question. The answer's next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back, and this is a great question. Rex Ryan, here it comes from Hembo to you. Who was the last Alabama quarterback to win an NFL playoff game?
Well, that's a great question. I know it's not Greg McElroy because I had him. But I'm going to say Richard Todd.
Yes!
Surely to God, he had to win a...
He got it right. That is exactly right. That is exactly right. Richard Todd, of whom I had posters on my wall when I was growing up, won 2 playoff games in the legendary playoff run in January of 83 before they went to Miami. And that's a whole other question for a whole other day. But they beat Cincinnati on the road behind Freeman McNeil. And then Lance Mel picked off Jim Plunkett twice in L.A. And they beat the Raiders on their way to the AFC Championship game. I remember it all a little. Well done, Rex Ryan. All right, in other news, in the dictionary, the word risk is defined as exposure to the chance of injury or loss. Well, in the case of the NFL draft, you might just as well spell it T-U-A, Tua Tagovailoa. Look, he finished college with the highest QBR of any quarterback in the 16 years that ESPN has tracked that stat. He has the highest passer efficiency rating in the whole history of the sport. He's number one all time. He was 22-2 as a starter at Alabama, and of course his most memorable game was one he didn't even start, when he threw three touchdowns off the bench to win the title in 2018. He threw 87 touchdowns at Alabama. That is a school that has three quarterbacks in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and those three, Bart Starr, Joe Namath, and Ken Stabler, combined to throw 52. I get the times have changed, but still. So all of that is on one side. And then there's the other side, which includes four surgeries, a finger, both ankles, and, of course, the dislocated right hip and fractured posterior wall that ended his college career. All those injuries came behind an offensive line that was not good. It was great. Bama allowed the fewest sacks of any Power 5 team the last two seasons. So you know all about the injuries. Did you also know there's at least a little cause for concern beyond that? Did you know that 44% of the interceptions Tua threw in his whole time as a starter came in two games? One of them was a 28-point loss to Clemson for the championship. The other was that SEC title game where Jalen Hurts had to come off the bench and save Bama's bacon. Tua threw four picks in those games. He only threw nine as a starter. So you factor that in however you choose. In the end, the way I see it is this. There has never been a greater risk-reward proposition in the draft than this player. And what the GMs have to decide is, which is riskier, to take Tua or to pass him up? Those are the questions. Let's go in search of the answers here. And I've got Laura Rutledge ready. And Laura, as you continue to give us all of the medical updates, I've never really had the chance to ask your opinion on this. How reasonable is it to factor in those performances in the big games against the really good defenses? His numbers didn't look the way they did the rest of the time. Is that a legitimate criticism or question?
It's absolutely legitimate. And here's what I would tell you, Greeny. Tua would say the same thing. That's one of the reasons why the decision to declare for the NFL draft this year was so difficult for him, because he also feels there was unfinished business in his college career. He wanted to go and prove more. And unfortunately, the injuries, which are also a concern, didn't allow him to do that. You know, I think you look specifically at those games that you mentioned, the Clemson game that he struggled in that national championship on such a big stage. That was a game that really is on its own. Here's your biggest stage in this moment, and you didn't do that well. Clemson had your number that entire game. And then that Georgia game, he wasn't healthy, which, like I said, you know, you're kind of weighing all of this throughout. What I would tell you, too, is if you look back at this year, the game of the century that we all talked about, that Alabama-LSU game, Joe Burrow against Tua Tagovailoa. Tua came back and played in that game, but I think we all know he was playing on one leg. I had asked him at one point how healthy he actually was in that game on a scale of 1 to 10. Greeny, he said a 10 because that was in his mind. But actually what his body was doing was much less than that. So all of these big moments that he would have had and something that he wanted to prove of being the best that he could be, he just hasn't been healthy, which is part of this entire conversation.
Yeah, so it's like, again, it's a jigsaw puzzle. You keep putting the pieces in until you get a full picture. Dan Orlovsky, is the criticism reasonable that he wasn't his best in the biggest games?
Of course it's reasonable, Greeny, but it also has to be placed with context. And to Laura's point, like that 2018 SEC title game, we all look at the fourth quarter when he gets stepped on and the knee and the ankle happen at the same time. The reality is he was hurt with 4 minutes into that game. 11 minutes to go in the first quarter, he does the initial ankle injury. And so he struggles with his health throughout that game. And then within 5 weeks or so, comes back against Clemson. Listen, that national title game against Clemson, Brent Venables got him. He had never seen a defense scheme-wise like what Venables was going to throw at him. Brent Venables makes every college quarterback look poor. If you really watch the start of the championship game this year with Bro, he struggled early on against Brent Venables in that Clemson defense and then eventually figured them out. Tua never did that. The reality is this, though. Tua at that point was 20. During those games, Tua was 20. Joe Burrow this year was 23. We often talk about the quarterback position as a developmental position. Tua had never experienced that before, whether scheme and struggle and failure. And so we've got to put it in context. Yes, that's a truth, but the reality was he was a very young player that never had the chance to learn from those mistakes.
Rex, let me give you the final word here. Is it riskier to take him or to pass him up?
Oh, I think it's riskier to take him. And when I look at it, if you're okay with every time your quarterback gets knocked down, he gets up with a limp, then it's not risky. But this pick truly is risky. And I want to say something. This kid, I don't think it has anything to do with the type of player he is, big games or whatever. He looked pretty good in a big game when he was a true freshman, when he came back and led his team to a national championship in the second half in that Georgia game. So to me, that throw out the play, it's all about injury. And I can tell you this, if you get hurt, if a player gets hurt in college, he's going to get hurt in the pros.
I am so happy to have Rex Ryan back. Guys, stay with me. We have much more football as we continue Get Up this morning. But we have word from the NBA as well, because, of course, as you know, the season postponed indefinitely because of the pandemic. Playing games in a centralized location has become, you know, one of the different possibilities of ways they may get back on the court. Yesterday, we had Kendrick Perkins on to talk about that idea, and here's what he said.
I need basketball like old people need soft shoes. But with that being said, I'm totally against this idea. Like, at this point of time, I have a wife and four kids, and if I were still in the NBA at this point of time, there's no way that I would be leaving my family during this pandemic of this coronavirus. There's no way.
So that was interesting, and I really wanted to get the perspective from someone else around the league. And here's my buddy Jay Will. It's great to see you again, my man. And let's talk about that. In the Chinese Basketball Association, they've basically told the players, we're going to take you to these centralized locations, you're going to come back and play, or you're cut, that's it, you're out of the league. The NBA doesn't work that way, obviously. What sense do you get about how the players would feel if that is the direction this ultimately goes?
Well, LeBron James already said it on the podcast with Richard Jefferson that he wasn't trying to leave his family. And I understand that LeBron James can do that, Greeny. LeBron James is making $25, $30 million a year. But, you know, then you do have the Chinese Basketball Association where you have guys that are leaving their family currently to go back over to China to try to play in order to generate revenue for their families because they need those paychecks. So it's, look, if it were me personally, if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't leave my family, but I can't judge people in this current climate that need those paychecks to continue to feed their family that would choose to play. So I think you have such a dichotomy of different levels here, and it's just not easy to say, I would never go do that. It depends upon your situation, Greeny.
Yeah, the circumstances obviously are going to take us places that we can't necessarily anticipate, and we'll take it as it comes. What are you hearing from players? You obviously talk to so many different guys about so many different things. What are you hearing from players right now as we all sit and wait and see if we're able to get the NBA season back?
You know, it's so interesting, Greeny. We're on TV and we're trying to ideate about how the season needs to continue or how you do that. Every NBA player that I've talked to in the boardroom, all these guys, it's such a sense of awareness. Of course they want to play. Of course they miss basketball. But they're talking to me more about the state of our economy. They're talking more about, hey, 10 million people are unemployed. They're talking more about the deaths that we're seeing. So it's very real for them, I think, in the overall holistic picture of the equation. Guys recognize where we're at, and I think basketball is secondary. And it's a very eerie feeling for everybody whenever we have these conversations.
Yeah, of course it is. And so in the interest of trying to provide a little fun, I like what we're doing here. Kevin Durant and other NBA players are going to participate in an NBA 2K virtual tournament that starts tonight on
yes.
ESPN. What are you hearing about that?
I love it, Greeny. First off, we need to have some fun for a minute, and I'm very intrigued. Who is Kevin Durant? Who is Trae Young? Who is Donovan Mitchell? Who are these guys going to play with if they play with other players? So imagine if Kevin Durant were playing with LeBron James, and LeBron James missed the jump shot down the end, and this is live streaming. You get a chance to hear the conversation that he's having with the Derrick Jones Jr. You know, if there's trash talking, you know, how will guys articulate what other players' weaknesses are if they need them to get something done in the final second of a game to win. So I think it just gives us a highlight of things we can talk about, and I look forward to the trash talking, especially Patrick Beverley. He trash talks on the court. Will he trash talk when it's live streaming? I want to see that.
We will find out tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN, as they will play this 2K tournament, just trying to find some ways to have some fun and stay in touch with these guys. Jay Will, good to see you, my man. Have a good weekend. We'll talk next week. Meanwhile, tonight is also movie night on ESPN with our feature presentation, Glory Road, which is based on the true story of the 1966 Texas Western basketball team won the national championship starting five African-American players. It's a great movie. It's tonight, 8:30 Eastern, it's on ESPN, and you can see it on the ESPN app. All right, coming up here, Chase Young is viewed by some as a can't-miss prospect, including Rex Ryan. He'll be telling you why anyone would be crazy to pass on him next.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
I created this circle of trust, and I trusted these guys.
I trust my guys.
I have ultimate trust in him.
I get off the basketball, I trust him.
You gotta trust the process.
I'm right here in B-More outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. I'm about that. Big trust. Woo, woo.
It is time now for Big Trust on Get Up. We have Rex and Dan Orlovsky, and we're going to put you in a couple of situations here, and you guys tell us how much trust you have in these things happening. 60 seconds on the clock. Rex, do you have trust that Washington will take Chase Young with the second pick in the draft?
I got big trust in that. And if you don't like it, come to the crib. But I got 24/7 security. You can't get to my crib, so forget about it. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. They're taking Chase Young. Absolutely slam dunk.
Just how good is this guy, Rex? I'm dying to hear from you, the defensive guy that you are. Just how good do you think this guy is going to be?
I think comparison, Greeny, is Khalil Mack. And not only does this guy sack the quarterback, but he forces fumbles. So he's a turnover machine waiting to happen. I think he's even got higher upside than Khalil Mack. So to me, yeah, no-brainer. This guy comes around once every 10 years. Oh, by the way, I understand they had Bosa last year.
Yeah.
So once every 2 years. But realistically, this is a can't-miss guy. He's going to fit right into Washington's plan and probably be a Pro Bowler as a rookie.
Orlovsky, got big trust there?
Absolutely. And Rex makes a great point with Khalil Mack. We got to remember that Ron Rivera is a defensive-minded head coach, and then his defensive coordinator is Jack Del Rio, who just happened to draft Khalil Mack, led him to 37.5 sacks in his first 3 years. And then Jack Del Rio had Vaughn Miller, who had 36.5 sacks under Jack Del Rio in his first 3 years. So those two coaches are going to take that player and make him a superstar.
All right, we went way past the buzzer there. Let's try to do better on this one. Dan Orlovsky, do you have big trust that Tua will be the second quarterback off the board in the draft? 60 seconds.
Absolutely, I do, Greeny. I mean, if you look at the doctors looking at these situations, if the doctors sign off on Tua, then it's not even close between him and Justin Herbert. Teams can't choose to nibble on mediocrity. They have to go try and choke on greatness, and that's what you're going to do with Tua. If Tua passes what your doctors need to see, it's a no-brainer selection for your organization, and you feel very confident that for the next 15 years, you are going to be better than other teams strictly because you have Tua in your organization.
How about you, Rex? Do you have trust? Do you believe that's you've made clear what you would do? Are you confident? Do you have big trust that's what will happen?
I do. I think Tua will be the second quarterback taken. I disagree with Dan, though. He's just throwing Herbert out there like he's just an average guy. He's not. Another guy's going to be wrong on quarterbacks, but that's just the way it is.
Okay, I like